Welcome to the Duff and Quarters podcast brought to you by Tab Touch. Today, we cast our eyes over the preliminary finals this weekend. News from Essendon, John Worsfold to coach his last year next year and be succeeded by Ben Rutten. And where to now for Willy Rioli?
That was out of bounds!
I don't believe it! I see it, but I don't believe it!
Dennis, where are you? I need you right now!
What's your name?
You're quite brilliant.
Yeah, terrific.
Oh, that is... Oh, that's what it is! The stadium holds its breath!
It's Duff and Quarters!
Brought to you by Tab Touch.
Well, hello everybody. Tuesday, it's preliminary final week in the AFL. It is the Duff and Quarters podcast. We are brought to you by Tab Touch. We are talking the morning after Lachlan Delahunty won the Sandover medal for Subiaco. Glenn Quartermain, the sports editor of the Sunday Times, sitting with me in the studio. I am Mark Duffield, the senior football writer at the West Australian. There's been a bit going on, Glenn.
There has. Good night at the Sandover medal last night.
Did you go?
One of many I've been to. Yes, I don't miss them. It's a great night. Congratulations to Lachlan Delahunty. Very humble winner. Almost apologetic that he stole the medal, in his words, from Cole Horsley with the last vote. But I think there was certainly some sentiment in the room for Cole Horsley, who's been runner-up on a number of occasions. But great win. Kane Mitchell third. Terrific night, as it always is. Always great to mingle with the great stuff. And a fine venue at Optus Stadium, the Riverview Room there.
Okay, so Delahunty first from Subiaco, 28 votes. Horsley second from Subiaco, 27 votes. Mitchell third from Claremont, 24 votes. Jai Bolton fourth from Claremont, 22 votes. Hayden Sloyth fifth from South Fremantle, 20 votes. And Clint Jones sixth from Perth, 19 votes. There's not many youngsters there. If you had to say something that concerned you about all of that... Where is the Hayden Ballantyne who won it as a kid? Where is the Sam Menegola who was a young player, stormed back into AFL contention by polling heavily in a Sandover medal? So on one hand, I think a great count and well-established players winning, but where are the AFL prospects out of all of that?
Probably playing Colts stuff, I'd say.
Playing Colts.
but a couple of things. Firstly, it was great to go back to 3-2-1.
Yeah,
I think it was the first time
absolutely.
For a long time they'd done that, and I much prefer the 3-2-1 format.
Yep, agree.
And good to see a ruckman winning. So I think the first since Ryan Turnbull in 2001, if I'm not, I think it's 2001. So good to see a ruckman winning. Let's hope the trend continues in the Brownlow medal next week.
And I think Gus Seebeck might have won either the year before Ryan or the year before that. I love Xavier Ellis. Xavier Ellis, obviously, on Seven and Seven Mates coverage of... Waffle Football. Love his analysis of the game. He was obviously a great thinker in his career at Hawthorn and West Coast, and I think he's a great thinker in the way he analyses the game when he's on TV. He said during the telecast of the glorious South Fremantle preliminary final win over Claremont on Sunday, he said that...
You're not going to give us a verse, mate?
I will if they win next week. You'll get the whole song if they win next week. But he said that he tipped Delahunty because he said midfielders go out and get 30 and their opponent gets 30. He said Delahunty goes out and gets 30 and his opponent gets 10 as a ruckman. He said that is a great point of difference for Subiaco, and that was very, very succinctly summing up, I think, the case for Lachie Delahunty winning this award. So well done, Lachie. Will be a key player on Sunday in the grand final against South Fremantle.
2:40 p.m. Sunday, Optus Stadium. Go. Get along.
Be there
Kids
or be
free.
Square.
Get along, support the Waffle. We want a big crowd there.
Absolutely. And just on...
And good luck with your boys, Duff. Subi, South Fremantle taking on the almighty Subiaco. You know, I think been a great club, Subiaco, for a long time, but I think... The purists among us probably want to see a South Fremantle
win. Well, not the purists, just probably everyone who's not barracked for Subi wants
Which
to see someone else win.
The purists among us.
Yeah. And that's no disrespect for Subi.
No, it's not just, at all. They've done a great job.
It is time for someone else to win.
Yep.
It's just a matter of whether South Fremantle are good enough to do that. Okay, Quarters, covering the news of the day. Essendon have come out today and they have said John Worsfold will coach the team in 2020. But Ben Rutten will coach the team in 2021. We're calling this the vote of limited confidence.
That's a very good way of putting it. This does two things. Obviously, it confirms that Woosha will be leading the helm next year. It also confirms Ben Rutten will take over from him.
And he
won't be coaching Adelaide. So, look, we've seen these succession plans are becoming more common. Ruse Goodwin, Knotts didn't go so well with Buckley and Malthouse or with Paul Keating either, for that matter. But, look, I don't mind it, actually. I don't mind the succession plan.
Park and Britain?
Yes. And the unofficial one that's taking a little longer would be Clarkson Mitchell, in my belief. But look, I don't mind it. We were speaking last week about how tough it is as an AFL coach now. It's a really hot environment. I don't mind the succession plan, just getting in there, getting a bit of a taste of it, learning how to deal with the stresses, because it's not, you can be the most equipped coach in the business or successor in the business, but when you're under the heat of the situation, it's completely different. So
if it works, you're a genius. If it doesn't work, what a stupid plan. Mm-hmm. The only problem I have with it is that it reeks of reactionary process, doesn't it?
Let's tie Rutten up.
A week earlier, they were happy for John Worsfold to coach the team in 2020 and then wait and see what happens. And then suddenly Adelaide needs a coach. And so they move to nail down Ben Rutten. And I guess the other question is, if they do go extremely well in 2020, who gets the credit? And if it is John Worsfold, why would they be looking to move a coach on? Let's say they finish top four next year.
Well, this is the Malthouse-Buckley story.
Yeah, so Malthouse coaches Collingwood into the 2011 grand final.
Yeah.
And then is not at the club in 2012.
The year after winning a premiership.
Yeah, so that's where it gets silly. And this is where it has the potential to divide the club. Now, the mail is that they're trying to bring a lot of Essendon in underneath Ben Rutten. So the mail is there will be a strong push to get Dean Solomon back to Essendon. And I'm told Dean Solomon may end up back at Essendon depending on how he goes in the Fremantle coaching process. I believe he is definitely a part of the Fremantle coaching process. Also Mark Harvey is likely to stay. Blake Caracciola has gone back there. Now that's all fine, but it looked a little bit like a viper's nest for Woosha, with the old Essendon gathering him around him and behind his back. Now, if Ben Rutten goes well, I think fine. But if he goes not too well, that whole old Essendon thing underneath him and around him, I don't know how that's going to unfold.
Yeah.
But as we say, if it works, whatever floats your boat in the AFL.
I don't think Essendon supporters will care one bit if they have a successful year next year.
Of course, no set of supporters do.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Winners are grinners, losers can please themselves.
Yeah, look, and I don't mind the succession plan, and I can see maybe down the track where the coaches roll. I mean, it already is. You have your head coach now and you have your line coaches, but I can see how you can have, I can see down the track having dual coaches too. That's just down the track.
Yeah. The other big news, of course, over the weekend, which broke on Thursday
afternoon.
Absolutely derailed. Well, when you say derailed, it must have had an effect on West Coast for their Friday night.
I think it derailed them.
Semi-final.
I don't think there's any question.
Willy Rioli facing a doping infraction for supposedly urine substitution in a test conducted on August 20. Quarters.
Which he has admitted to, Duff. My little mistake. I'm not sure if the wording of little was appropriate, but he's basically admitted that he's made a mistake.
Yeah. So what do you see unfolding from here about this?
Well, he's going to serve a lengthy suspension if found guilty, and he should, because he has they don't muck around at WADA and ASADA, and nor should they. They've got an international reputation to uphold, and it's a very, very serious situation. So I guess there'll be the mitigating circumstances. We've heard the Eagles saying he panicked.
Naivety. I think stupidity is a better word than naivety.
All of those things, Duff. But the bottom line is he's going to have to serve a suspension. The debate will be how long. And I know you have your thoughts on this. The maximum is 4 years. I think he probably won't get the maximum. It'll be somewhere scaled back from that. But I guess what we need to look at is what would be a fair minimum.
I would urge West Coast and the AFL to try and sell to WADA an 18-month ban. And my thinking is this. An 18-month ban means Willy Rioli cannot come near the club over this summer, cannot play for the Eagles next year, and cannot come near the club the following summer, but is available to play at the start of the 2021 season. He probably misses all the preseason games. He probably only gets to train. I think they can come back to train. It's either a month or 2 months before the end of their suspension. So he probably gets at least 1 month of training in with the club, maybe 2 months in before the start of that season, and he can play in 2021.
So you're saying a pre-negotiated agreement because...
Not a pre-negotiated agreement, but I think what the AFL Tribunal has to come up with, and the AFL Tribunal will eventually be the first body to hear this. So what the AFL Tribunal has to come up with is a ban that the World Anti-Doping Authority will be prepared to accept. And what I would urge them to do is to learn from the Essendon saga, yeah, where they were the only body in all of the bodies that looked at the Essendon saga who weren't comfortably satisfied that something untoward had taken place. And WADA came in over the top of them and took it to the Court of Arbitration for Sport, and the bans ensued. Now, if we get something for this that WADA believes is a meaningless or inadequate ban, I think you're looking at the same scenario. You're looking at the scenario because what they have to remember is the integrity of WADA's testing program is on the line here. You can't have a situation where every Lance Armstrong out there, and I'm not for a minute suggesting that Willy Rioli is a Lance Armstrong, but every Lance Armstrong out there thinks all I have to do is pour a sports drink into my urine sample and then plead naivety or stupidity and get off with a vastly reduced ban. They have to give some WADA something that they believe upholds the integrity of their testing program. 18 months might just do it, and it would turn the Rioli ban into something more akin to a knee injury in terms of time out of the game, where it's happened late in the season, he misses a season and plays the next season. What do you think?
I think 2 years. I'd be okay with 2 years.
Well, I think 2 years is the most likely outcome.
Yeah, I think that would. I think that sends a message.
Yeah,
it keeps WADA happy, and I mean, it's. I think the most important thing is the message it sends.
Yeah,
it's very serious. I think so. I think it's going to be a really intriguing 6 months, though.
I think 18 months might be achievable if you look at, Sam Murray, I think got an 18-month ban. And if you look at...
The Sam Murray situation, it was a recreational drug, but it was detected on match day.
Yeah,
so... And Scale, his argument was it was not taken on match day, it was taken before, they were just the remnants, therefore they scaled back the penalty.
That's right.
I see this as just as serious, to be honest. I know there's
no, this been, is more serious.
Yeah, because... Tampering with your urine. I mean,
this is more serious, and that's the thing they have to get their head around. No matter what Willie's motives were, how this is going to be viewed by the World Anti-Doping Authority, that's what they have to get their head around, and it's important they do that before the AFL Tribunal sits down and hears this and comes up with any penalty the World Anti-Doping Authority might consider inadequate for this particular case.
I think it's important to also note that these players aren't ignorant of this testing. They are well and truly schooled in these matters.
And I think the other thing, Quarters, that's going to have to happen, it shouldn't have to happen, but I think it's going to have to happen, is that if you're a club, knowing what's on the line here, you're going to have to send chaperones in with your players when they're drug tested, because clearly there are some players who just aren't capable of taking this with the appropriate amount of seriousness. Now, that shouldn't be the case.
Are you allowed to send chaperones?
Yes, you are.
Okay, well, then that should happen.
It shouldn't be the case, given that teenagers at Olympics get their heads around this without any trouble whatsoever. But it would appear that for some reason... footballers have trouble grasping the obvious. And so clubs need to adjust their processes, and every club, because clearly this has happened to a West Coast player, but clearly every club needs to grapple with this. Of course, the follow-on from this was Peter Sumich's outburst on 6PR, or his comments on 6PR on Saturday.
Suggesting that it was a must be a common practice.
Not an isolated.
Yeah, not an isolated, let's put it that way. But I'm not sure where he was coming from there, to be honest. I was a little dumbfounded by those comments.
Yeah, well, that's led to I believe, harsh words between Peter Sumich and Adam Simpson. And Adam Simpson certainly spoke out on Channel 7 last night to call Peter Sumich out on his comments. Peter Sumich was trying to put his comments in a different context when he went on SEN radio in Melbourne today, saying that he didn't say this applied specifically to West Coast, that this applied generally across the competition, which I think is Peter backpedalling faster than his balance, his sense of balance.
He's certainly listening to the interview on Saturday. That's not the way most of us took it. So
yeah, I think for Peter, the ramifications of this are going to be whatever his chances at Fremantle, those chances have just halved or even quartered.
Yep.
Because certainly he spoke out of turn on radio on Saturday. That's not going to bode well for him in the Fremantle coach selection process. I would urge the powers that be in WA footy to not hold it against him as far as his role as the WA18s coach is concerned. I think Peter Sumich has been a very important figure in the State 18s program, and I think having a voice with his credibility recommending our players to the AFL system, I think, has been a good thing. So hopefully, you know, West Coast is a very powerful club in WA football.
Yes.
I would hope their tentacles don't reach far enough into the WA Football Commission where this would influence the employment of Peter Sumich in the 18s program, because I would, I'm assuming now that Peter Sumich will not be coaching Fremantle. And I'm hoping, you know, in terms of an outcome for WA footy, I'm hoping he's still coaching the State 18s next year, because I think that's a good outcome for WA football.
Let's hope so, Duff. We saw one big retirement at the weekend, Luke Hodge.
Yes.
And I've, what a wonderful 2 years. And coming from a Hawthorn supporter, never liked watching him, seeing him in another club's jumper, but from a football point of view, it was just a great 2 years. He gave that club a lot. And I was really pleased. He's had a good final series, and he's out on top. He's gone out on top.
Yeah, best player in their best players in both finals.
Now, I urge other players to follow suit. This is a big bugbear of mine when they go on too long. You know that.
You're not going
to
raise the spectre of Joshy Kennedy.
No, well, we've been there. I'm more looking at little Gaz, actually, Gary Ablett. I just think it's the cliff's coming pretty quickly, and hasn't had a great final series. So let's see. Let's hope we see some vintage Gaz this weekend.
Well, on that front, Quarters, I'm going to raise in my column tomorrow in the West Australian, I'm going to raise the prospect that when Chris Scott looks to replace Tommy Hawkins in the preliminary final team at full forward, that little Gaz is the player he should look at.
Okay, for full forward.
Well, to me, it's going to be wet, which means it's going to be a ground ball game.
Yes.
And they've got Asava Radigalia to give him a contest. They've got Reece Stanley back in the team, who should have played in the qualifying final against Collingwood. I think they can get away with an undersized full forward, and I think...
So maybe you bring in a Constable or someone like that too? Who's
I think Gary Rowan will probably play. Gary Rowan's putting his hand up to play. So I think he's a chance to go in. But you might be right. It might be a Charlie Constable. If they think it's going to be wet and there's going to be a bit of sting out of the game, that might be...
Well, and Ablett has performed that role in the past.
Yes, a G Ablett. Mm. And the occasion I'm reminding people of when I'm saying that Chris Scott should at least consider this is the 1986 State of Origin game when Ron Alexander threw an old great midfielder forward, Brian Peake.
Oh, yes.
And he produced a match-winning performance against Victoria at Subiaco Oval.
Seven?
I think he kicked seven, yeah. And we won by 3 points.
You did.
And the risk of upsetting, I'm going, nan-nan-nan-nan. Okay, the two big incidents to come out of that weekend and the reason why the Cats need a replacement full forward, Hawkins Green. So the Hawkins 1 week ban has been upheld.
So it should have been. Yeah.
Yep.
Maybe lucky he didn't get two actually, but I think 1 week is more, you know, it has to serve that. He was one of the major factors last week in their win. Hadn't kicked a goal since round 21, went into the final last week, and we spoke about this, and Geelong was always going to throw the kitchen sink at them early. And they did, and he was up and about in the first quarter, and I thought they're going to win this.
Yeah,
and he's a massive out, massive, massive out. I would have picked Richmond anyway.
Yeah,
but I just think I would have thought more seriously about it had he been playing. Yeah, I think that's about right. And the other one is Toby Green. Obviously, The incident this week, not as serious as the incident last week, which was referred directly to the tribunal, and of course the AFL advocate didn't even argue for a suspension. This week, he's just been given a week. So I think it's the AFL. It's the AFL's way of saying we told you.
So, metaphorically speaking,
yes, I like this metaphor.
They've given Toby Green a chance, and clearly if you fine $7,500, you probably should have been suspended.
Yeah.
They've given him a chance. Toby Green, being Toby Green, has, by his actions on Lachie Neale, extended the middle finger to the AFL, and Michael Christian, in citing him and giving him a week, has said, I'll see you that middle finger and I'll raise you one.
Yeah, exactly.
And given him one back. And, look, I have a problem with the process here. Clearly, the AFL had a negotiated outcome last week. It wanted Toby Green on the field against Brisbane. It got him on the field. He's gone and done it again. I think there's a chance they can argue this down to a fine. Morally, I think Toby Green shouldn't have been out there last week.
No, he shouldn't have been.
And the fact that he's not clever enough to realise that and adjust his behaviour probably says morally he shouldn't be out there this week. But procedurally, it's a joke, really, isn't it?
It is. It is a joke. I guess I wouldn't mind seeing him in a funny sort of way getting off, because if he doesn't play, they can't win.
I think they can win.
No, if he plays, they definitely can win. But I'm not sure if they can win without him this week.
Yeah, I disagree with that. I think GWS is a real chance against Collingwood. I'll be tipping Collingwood, and I think, you know, with the week off, I think they're the...
I'll be waiting to see what happens with Toby Green before I make my tip.
I think GWS can still win this week without Toby. And B, I actually think they're almost a better chance to give Richmond a run than Collingwood the following week if they get through.
Yeah, I'd agree with that.
I just reckon with a bunch of talented kids like this, with their tails in the air off the back of three big finals win if they beat the Pies, I think they'll be formidable. If they got
to
grand final.
There's a bit of bulldogs about them from a couple of years ago.
There is, yeah.
And they just really, really hard finals football they're playing. And yep. I think Green is the forefront of that. So I worry about them without him.
So the other issue to come out of that game, quarters, was the Sean Ryan pointing the finger at Adam Kennedy, the GWS defender.
Yeah.
Charlie Cameron had his elbow hurt in an awful-looking incident.
Oh, the complete accident. Hyperextension, yeah.
The hyperextension of the elbow. Came back on the field and Adam Kennedy gave it a couple of whacks and Sean Ryan basically pulled him up and said, if you continue to do that, I'll be paying
a free
kick.
If it's persistent duff, I don't mind that, but yep. It wasn't. And now, this rule was brought in for Nick Riewoldt.
Yeah.
That was the incident. I think it was Chris or Brad Scott.
Scott.
Anyway, so Nick Riewoldt is injured and as he exits the field, is roughed up. That's why the rule was brought in, not if you're still out there.
Yeah.
Now, he's still out there. And the thing I'll say is, well done, Charlie Cameron, to be out, not only be out there, but have an impact. It took a couple of marks. So I thought it was really brave of him to be back out there. But you just got to wear it. You're out there. I think you're fair game. As long as it's not whack, 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 you know, like all the time, then you're entitled to pay a free kick and then they'll stop doing it. But it really wasn't. I thought it was over umpiring.
Yeah,
I like the sentiment of it,
yeah.
But I do think it was over-umpiring, but I wouldn't hang him for it.
No, interesting. Craig O'Donoghue, our colleague, who's, of course, a former umpire, wrote a column passionately defending Sean Ryan. Sean Ryan is one of the AFL's most experienced umpires and certainly one of their best umpires. Be very surprised if he's not out there on grand final day. Mm. But I tend to agree with you. I think it was a bit early in the interaction between... But Cameron and Kennedy.
The argument could also be raised that had he not warned him...
He put a fence on the hill rather than an ambulance in the valley.
Yeah. But, yeah. I mean, let him sow his own misery. Let him keep hitting him and then just pay a free kick in front of goal and he'll soon stop.
And we certainly all did, me included, we certainly all did rail at the umpire who stood next to Ben Stratton when he was repeatedly whacking and pinching Charlie Cameron and just laughed and thought it was funny. And had that guy paid a free kick, the behaviour would have stopped. So I do take that point. Craig certainly made that point in his column today. So that is certainly a valid perspective to take. Quarters, let's move on. West Coast Premiership defence. So they've gone out at the semi-final stage.
Well, lost at round 23.
Against the Hawks.
Yep.
You do anything to bring up a Hawthorn victory,
yep.
Will you?
No, I just, look, I think that's, it's really hard outside. I prefer to see WA's side in the top two.
Yeah.
Top four is definitely doable, but outside the four, it's very tough. It's hard to go back-to-back anyway.
Yeah.
Even harder if you're from Western Australia. I thought it was a pretty good premiership defence. I don't think it was a abject failure by any means.
No.
I thought it was, you know, they finished outside the four, won a final against an opponent that we
regarded
sort
as
of limped in.
Clearly the eighth best team
and
in
limped
the finals.
In, and
yeah.
just limped in.
Yep.
But I think it's a tick. But you can't be too greedy. I mean, they've won a flag a year ago and, as I said, really cost themselves in round 23. So, you know, there's a lot to like about the year. Oscar Allen, Tom Hickey, two in particular, among others, the usual suspects. But there'll be some list changes. But it's a pretty good list. And I expect them to be pretty well thereabouts top four again next year.
Yeah, I'll say top six. And I think that if we look at the teams we think are going to be there in the top four, there's no reason why we shouldn't think Richmond will be there again. There's no reason why we think Collingwood shouldn't be there
but
again.
But there'll be a bolter, of course, and I think you're picking Carlton to be that bolter.
Well, maybe not into the top four. I think Carlton should play finals next year. I think Brisbane, even though Brisbane will have a tougher draw, I think Brisbane will be there or thereabouts.
Yeah.
And I think GWS, given they've survived the injuries they've survived this year and re-signed Cornelio, I can see them being there or thereabouts as well, which means that there might be, and there'll be someone else, you know, if Essendon get a better run with injury and if their vote of limited confidence coaching structure works, they could be there. They've certainly got the talent to be around the mark. And
Geelong, we wait and see what happens with Geelong. They could drop out.
I think Geelong will slide a little bit. Regardless of how they go this week, I think that Geelong is getting to a point where their age is near a tipping point. We expect them to lose Tim Kelly to probably to West Coast, but maybe to Fremantle. We expect him to probably want to come home. Mm. And, yeah, we'll just see how that all goes. I tend to agree. They're not a disastrous premiership defence by any stretch of the imagination. The only thing I would say is that there was a problem that haunted them all year. And in my column on Monday, I wrote, premiership hangovers, they don't have to be blatant ones like, you know, you completely collapse.
Yeah.
They can be...
just a little bit dusty.
You're a little bit dusty, yeah. And I think West Coast were a little bit like that all year. They had a lot of players come off compressed pre-seasons, and that might have claimed a few of them at the tail end of the year. B, in every loss they had quarters, they copped a touch-up in contested possession.
Yeah, they did.
And that cuts to your intent and your hunger. And Adam Simpson has told us repeatedly that, you know, it's not all about contested possession with them. They have a range of measurements that they use to measure intent, and I fully accept that. But that was the common denominator in their losses. A few times they didn't just lose it, they lost it fairly convincingly. And the damning figure on Friday night was minus 16 in contested possession in the last quarter alone. And that led to a 19-6 edge in inside 50s, and everything pretty much flowed from them. 4-1 to 0-1, and your four-point lead becomes a four-goal loss at the end of the game.
The other thing they'll look at is their back six, who were great this year, but the teams are now addressing that. So they'll just have to find a way around that. You know, Jeremy McGovern's getting one out a bit more now. So
yep.
they'll look at all that stuff over the summer, and I'm sure they'll come back bigger and better.
What West Coast were doing for a long time was that it was, and it was a thing of absolute beauty, the way their defence set up. It was McGovern and Barras would be the floaters, sometimes Shepherd, sometimes Hearn, but usually McGovern, Barras. And the other players would engage the players that were around them and basically ground them. And what was looking like contested intercept marks were pretty much uncontested marks.
Yeah.
What they're doing now is other teams are going, well, let's engage McGovern and Barras and let's get them body on body and make sure that they're in a contest. And then what they're doing is they're in many ways eliminating, but at least reducing the number of intercept marks they're taking. So they have to find a different way. I thought Shannon Hearn laboured towards the end of the year. As good as his first half of the year was, he either was injured or just showing
had the
signs
hammy,
of age.
Didn't he, as well?
Josh Kennedy, either injured or showing signs of age. So we'll see how they come back.
Probably a bit of both. Barras clearly labouring under an injury.
Yeah, I think so. Yeah.
And that showed the last 6 weeks, really. So.
And then it affected his confidence, and then basically he was really battling after that. I think you give them a pass mark, but obviously they wanted to go back-to-back. And the three most disappointed people will be Nick Natanui, Brad Shepherd and Andrew Gaff, the three people who didn't play last year.
I'd give them a B.
Yeah.
I don't think it's a C season. I think it's a B season.
Well, I think if you make the finals, you've had a B season. I'd give them a B plus. You know, the top four is almost where your A's come from. They haven't quite gotten there, but I think it's a B plus.
And if you look, as I said before, back to backs are hard to win. And if you wonder how hard, look at Richmond last year.
Yeah,
I didn't have a great final series really, but they were the best team last year, and then daylight second, and just couldn't go back to back. It's really tough.
Yep.
So I think, you know, to put yourself in a position almost. It's just that round 23 will just haunt them for a long time, I think.
Okay, quick five questions on West Coast. Does Tim Kelly get to West Coast?
I know everyone seems very bullish. That's where he wants to go, but I'm just not discounting Freo. I still think it's a 50-50, mate.
50-50?
I think Freo's got a little bit more tradability about them, so we'll see what happens there. But I'm still saying Freo's right there in the chopper.
Okay, follow-up question. Can Tim Kelly get to West Coast given the trade
Yeah, of course
problem?
He can.
What would they have to give to get Tim Kelly?
They want a first rounder. Eagles might have to trade in an earlier first rounder. Eagles might have to trade someone out. I'm not sure if Gaff's available, but the other thing is who does he squeeze out of that midfield?
Yep.
So they're questions, but I think it's going to be an early first rounder at minimum.
Okay. Who of the West Coast older players do you think are vulnerable and maybe...
Well, Maston and Schofield, I don't think, will be at the club next year.
I think Schofield's got a contract, hasn't he?
Has he?
I thought he signed... I might be wrong here. I thought he signed a one-year deal. I might be wrong.
Yeah, I'm not
sure
if
he signed a one-year deal.
Okay.
I wouldn't be surprised if he's still around. Maston was very emotional after the game.
Yeah, he's not there next year. Clearly, that was, he was shedding a tear for his career, his time at the Eagles.
And your boy Josh Kennedy.
Well, you know my thoughts there. I just think it's better to go out and top, as we have seen with Luke Hodge.
Yeah.
I thought the signs were there. Is he going to be able to produce the form midway through next year is my question. If you're playing another year, you're playing another year, not another half a year. So I just think that he should go out while he's on top.
Okay. Thank you very much for joining us today. We've been brought to you by Tab Touch. We will be back on Thursday to talk you through the two preliminary finals. Should be big games. I'm really looking forward to the Collingwood GWS game on Saturday
just
night.
Just on that, it's pure football preliminary finals.
All the fans get to go.
All the fans of the clubs get to go. You haven't got the corporates that you have on grand final day. And it's that crazy football where you've got players who are giving absolutely everything because they know what's on the line, but not absolutely everything because they don't want to be injured the following week. It's a crazy weekend of footy. It's probably my favourite weekend, preliminary final weekend.
Oh, I agree. It's the most... My favourite game of footy ever was the 1999 prelim final when Carlton beat Essendon. I think that was the loudest crowd I've ever heard at the MCG.
Was that the tackle gone wrong?
That was the Fraser Brown tackle on Dean Wallace.
Yes. I'll tell you, my favourite, and I wasn't there, was the Hawthorn Port prelim a couple of years ago. I was at the Sunday Times working in Stirling, the old Stirling Street office.
Yes.
And it was the game where Hawthorn stopped at three-quarter time and Port came charging home. I couldn't stand it, so I went for a walk. And I'm walking around the deserted streets around Perth and on a Saturday afternoon. And I'm just looking at my phone, and it's just showing me goal. Goal, goal, and it got down to within one kick.
It did.
And then
yep.
it was a behind to Port.
So it was 5-point
panicking because I knew it was in their fourth line. And then all of a sudden, final score with Hawthorn in front. And I'm just standing there and I've just let out this roar. And there's a bloke the other side of the road just looking at me thinking, what is going on with this guy? You know, it was quite strange. But
and the same time you let out that roar, your colleague Craig Nitschke, who's a Port Adelaide supporter.
Saying we were robbed.
There was a 50-50 free kick that could have been paid in the dying seconds that could have given Port a shot to win the game.
Yeah.
All right, Quarters, thank you for joining me today. We'll be back on Thursday to try and tip you a winner in the AFL preliminary finals. Hope you can join us then.
This has been the Duff and Quarters podcast brought to you by Tab Touch.